Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. RESPECT, find out what it means to Aretha Franklin today on Advanced. Hi, friends. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. This is Naomi, and you're joining us for the third day of our music article this month, Musical Legends Get Better With Time. Today is April 27th, and I have to admit, in my personal opinion, this article has gotten better with time. We're on my favorite day because this is my favorite singer of the bunch, and we've been talking about legends who started strong many years ago, but who people are still familiar with, and they're still performing, still involved in new projects. And today we are encountering a real star. And joining me once again to discuss it, first of all, we have Bill Quinn.
Hi, Naomi, and hello, listeners. Glad to be here and talking about these three singers. And today we cover Aretha Franklin. And what's interesting about Aretha Franklin is that she also is from the same hometown as Anita Baker, who we talked about in the first day. Mm. So there's a reason for all of that.
Maybe there's something in the water there.
Well, I don't know about in the water, but there is the Motown sound in Detroit, and it became famous in the early 60s, and it became the place for black artists, African Americans, to start their careers in Detroit. And it became a hotbed for these singers, for R&B and soul and gospel. So, and they still are thriving today.
That's absolutely true. Joining us once again today also is Nathaniel Dunn.
Hello, everyone. We're talking about Aretha Franklin today, and it's impossible for me not to know who she is because she's so big, so popular. Not the person I know the most about in this bunch, that would have been yesterday, but I still do know some of her songs, and I enjoy her style.
I think she's probably the most famous of the three. I mean, if you don't know a lot about music, there's a good chance you've still heard of Aretha Franklin.
Yeah.
I grew up listening to some of her music because, you know, we had it in the house and because it's very catchy. It's easy to, in my house we danced growing up and we would always dance to Aretha Franklin.
That's great. That's
she's
really
got,
cute.
You know, she's got great, great sounds.
Easy to dance to Aretha Franklin. Yeah.
Really?
You know, when you mention this, I'm thinking, yeah, of course, her music was always on the airwaves. I would hear it. But also, she appeared always on TV, and she's actually been in several movies. Mm-hmm. So she's very familiar with most people in North America.
Okay, definitely. Now, it turns out that she has quite the story as well, quite a background. And I wasn't familiar with all of this before I read this article. There's quite a lot to her. And we begin just with our title for today. We call her a crossover queen. So before we get into the topic, Nathaniel, can you explain a bit about crossover?
Well, this crossover means crossing over from one thing to another. And in this case, it's also talking about style. She's going from one style to another. We're going to learn a little bit more about that. But that's really what made her partially what made her really famous was that she was able to accomplish this crossover.
I think it's interesting because this is actually a big contrast to Neil Young. Mm. We were just talking yesterday about how he has really been really sure of himself and his artistic perspective, very true to himself throughout his career.
As we talked about yesterday, Neil Young has really never compromised his style. It's always been the same, his musical style, but especially his lyrics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so he's stuck to that for 45 years. Now, that you can be successful with that. And also what Aretha Franklin has done is she's changed some of her styles over the years, but I would say she has not compromised. She's just changed styles.
Right. Yeah. And so it's interesting to me how we can actually praise these two artists for doing very different things from each other. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Aretha is just so good at what she does. You know, she hasn't sort of tried something and failed. She's tried things and succeeded.
Yeah, she is. She is easy to love. I think, you know, it just takes a few songs and you realize just how talented she is.
Mm-hmm. But often when we do hear crossover, we think of people who have moved from one type of music to another and maybe lost some credibility.
Mm. Yeah, they try to do too much. They do something outside of their realm, and if maybe it's too extreme when they try and cross over. Aretha Franklin is a more gradual shift as far as her moving from one genre to another genre.
Okay, and we'll find out all about that story as we begin today on page 40.
Aretha Franklin, the crossover queen. The gospel truth, if you believe most of the history books, Aretha Franklin didn't really find her true voice until she began working with producer Jerry Wexler at Atlantic Records in 1967. My idea was to make good tracks, use the best players, put Aretha back on piano, and let the lady wail, Wexler wrote.
So we call Aretha Franklin the crossover queen. And why? Where does this begin? Well, if we go back just to this article, we start to learn a little about her history. The gospel truth, we start off with. Now, when you hear the gospel truth, what do you think?
Well, that is the real truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, I guess you might say. It's the truth. Information that you can be that can be trusted.
Where does this expression come from?
Well, it comes from the Bible and
right.
church. So the minister, the pastor might say something. This is the gospel truth, and that is God's spoken word.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, you can't argue with that. That's absolutely 100% true. So in this case, the gospel truth, if you believe most of the history books, is what?
That Aretha Franklin didn't really find her true voice until she began working with producer Jerry Wexler.
Okay, so she started working with him at Atlantic Records in 1967, and this is when most people became familiar with her work.
Yeah, you know, we see here, first off, find her true voice, mm-hmm. and it's not like she was mute before then and mm-hmm. could not speak. Actually, find her true voice means find the area that she does the best in singing.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, and so how did Jerry Wexler produce her sound?
Well, he kind of had this plan that he was going for. He said, my idea was to make good tracks, you could just say good songs, I guess, use the best players that he could find, but also put Aretha back on piano and let the lady wail, he says.
Okay, mm-hmm. here, players being musicians, mm-hmm. Let the lady wail, what does he mean by that?
Well, that means once Aretha starts playing and singing, she gets so into it and so motivated, she literally is almost sounding like she is yelling. That's how loud she is singing. We call that wailing.
Yeah, it means you're really going. You're giving it your all.
Yeah.
And she can wail. She mm-hmm. sings so, so well. And an example of one of her biggest hits that you might recognize from this kind of era would be R-E-S-P-E-C-T. So let's hear it. I'm grooving here. I love this music. Do you see what I mean about dancing?
R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
One of my first spelling lessons. All right. All she's asking is for a little respect. That's a great example of how talented she is and just how much she really can sing. But jumping back up to that first line of this paragraph, we called it the gospel truth. Now, why would we say the gospel truth in talking about Aretha? Well, it actually has to do with musical styles.
Yes, because gospel is one of these styles, really the first style that she came out of, and that's one style that people really maybe think of when they hear her name.
Okay, but it sounds like most people, once again, don't really think of Aretha as being successful until she had hits like R.E.S.P.E.C.T. But we find in this article there's a lot of background to her story, so let's learn more about it in our next reading.
Changing the Game. But the Aretha before and after her soul golden age often gets short shrift. In his latest book, The Fan Who Knew Too Much, Anthony Halbert argues persuasively that even before Aretha walked into a studio to record with Wexler, she had already begun to change the game for women, African Americans, and music culture. As the daughter of one of the most powerful ministers in America, Reverend C.L. Franklin, Aretha already had a platform at Detroit's New Bethel Baptist Church to showcase her extraordinary multi-octave, multi-hued voice. At 14, she was not just recording gospel, but imbuing it with drama and depth of feeling that were miles beyond her years. Still, in her late teens, she was touring the gospel circuit alongside the Staple Singers and Sammy Bryant, second billed to her father, the star preacher.
So Aretha was a game changer. And what does it mean? Usually we've heard that term in business articles.
Yeah, we have heard that in business articles. People come out with new products or ways of doing things, changes the industry. Yeah, but with Aretha, you know, she changed the music, and particularly for women and African-American women. For her, she actually made this a popular, accepted role as far as singing the gospel and blues and soul, things like that.
Mm-hmm. And we argue here that Aretha before and after, but we're sort of focusing on before, her soul golden age often gets short shrift. Okay, so her soul golden age would be what we were just talking about when she signed with Atlantic Records and started producing these hits that are still very, very well known today. What does that expression mean?
Well, if something gets short shrift, people don't really care about it anymore. They don't give it a lot of respect. So after, you know, that period of time where she was really successful, after that passed, maybe people didn't pay her a lot of attention, or at least to what she was doing at that time.
Right. After, but also before she made that crossover move. And so we're referring, and throughout this article, to a book called The Fan Who Knew Too Much by Anthony Halbert, and he is arguing something.
He argues persuasively that even before Aretha walked into a studio to record with Wexler, she had already begun to change the game. So first off, let me just stop right there. He's arguing persuasively. He's trying to present a new understanding of her career.
Right. So if you write persuasively, you're trying to convince people of something. You're trying to present reasons why they should maybe change their minds about something. So he's saying, wait, you have not been giving Aretha enough credit for the years before she really became so famous. We see that she was already a game changer then. For who?
Well, for several different things, really. First of all, for women, but then also for African Americans and even a broader audience, the whole music culture. So that's a really big claim for Halbert to make.
Okay. So why does he make this claim? Where does it go back to? Where did she begin?
Well, we see in the next paragraph that she grew up in the church as the daughter of one of the most powerful ministers in America, Reverend C.L. Franklin. So that is, we're going to find out, is the genesis of her gospel roots.
Okay, so if you've ever attended a church, then you might be familiar with this. There's often a lot of singing in church, and it's one of the reasons why people enjoy it. But particularly in African-American churches, there can be a big sort of subculture of fantastic music going on in churches. It's where a lot of popular singers have gotten their start. I think of somebody like, well, the late, great Whitney Houston was another one.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, certainly music in the African-American churches, many of these gospel churches, these places are rocking. You might walk in and you might think, wow, I walked into a concert.
It's a party.
I didn't walk into a church. Yeah, it's a party.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun and it really pumps people up.
It is. So it's a big part of this culture. And particularly being the daughter of a famous pastor, she had a way to sort of begin her career.
Right. I mean, this church gave her a platform. Aretha already had a platform at Detroit's New Bethel Baptist Church. So she could, as a platform, you could also think of that as a stage, really. She had a place to perform to get herself out there.
Okay. Here we say to showcase her talent. If you showcase something, you really put it on display, you show it off, you shine a light on it.
Well, certainly, she's actually very fortunate. She's going to have an audience maybe of 1,000 people, maybe more. Every Sunday, maybe she gets to play one or two songs, and they're going to be listening to her and say, Aretha singing this weekend, yeah. And she will have their attention, and it gives her a chance to showcase or show off her extraordinary multi-octave, multi-hued voice.
Okay, what does that mean?
Okay, multi-octave, you know, you can think of that being a lower register and a higher register. She's able to sing a big range. Multi-hued would be many different flavors or colors that she can give to her voice as well.
Right, so the sort of tone of her voice can, it has a lot of variety, more than most singers.
Mm-hmm. And it enables her to sing many different songs, even gospel songs. There's all sorts of different types.
Okay, so she had potential to be a great gospel star. And sure enough, as we continue at the top of the next column, we see that's what was happening here.
Yeah, she was not just recording gospel at age 14, but imbuing it with drama and depth of feeling that were miles beyond her years.
Ooh, very nicely written. So if you imbue something with drama and depth, you're sort of filling it up with that. You're weaving it through it. So this is something any kind of artist needs to do, right?
Right. Yeah, you should almost have this acting quality if you're going to be a singer and express yourself through lyrics and music, which it seems that she was able to do very well from a very young age. 14, she was already putting a lot of this feeling into her singing.
So miles beyond her years?
Yeah, of course, we're thinking about time and distance as kind of a similar idea here, because you can't really be a mile beyond a year, but you can be, seem much older than you are in some ways, which is what they're trying to say about Aretha here.
Okay, so she was enormously talented, but
still, in her late teens, she was touring the gospel circuit alongside the Staple Singers and Sammy Bryant. They were second billed to her father.
Okay, now here's the key point there. So she's touring the gospel circuit. Now, that's not a bad thing. Even today, we have a lot of gospel singers that are very successful within that genre of music. But she was second billed to her father.
Well, top billing goes to the kind of the star of the show. If you're second billed, you know, you're also on the poster, your name is up there, but the print is much smaller.
Right.
So you still get a place to perform, even if it's not as showcasing of a spot to be in.
Okay, but her father was really the star at this point. And so how could she really gain success when she was sort of, you know, the extra person, the opening act?
In this situation, she will always be C.L. Franklin's daughter.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So how did she make a change? Let's go to our final reading.
Switching it up. She signed to Columbia Records in 1960, a move widely interpreted as her leaving gospel to pursue wealth and fame on the wider stage of pop. But her father approved of the changeover, and his voice carried immense weight with his numerous followers. Franklin herself made a persuasive case in 1961 when she framed her transition in the context of the emerging civil rights movement, a viable means of expression that didn't repudiate her gospel roots so much as expand them. Helbert goes a step further. He suggests that Franklin didn't bend to pop, so much as bend pop toward her. She was really the first gospel star to switch fields without switching styles.
So Aretha Franklin decided to switch it up, to make a change. And how did she do that?
Well, first we see here, early in her career, she signed to Columbia Records in 1960. And this move was widely interpreted as her leaving gospel.
Okay, so if it's interpreted?
Well, it is understood as, and people see this as, the shifting point, the changing point.
Okay, so she was leaving gospel, this whole type of music, so that she could make more money, basically.
That's what some people might think. They might get that from this move because Columbia Records is a big label. It seems like she might be pursuing wealth and fame on a wider stage, a stage of popular music, of pop.
Okay. And a lot of artists do this even today. I think of examples like Katy Perry or Jessica Simpson. These are really well-known artists that started out in gospel music and made such a big change that you would never guess that today.
Yeah, no, because, you know, they might say, oh, I want a bigger audience. I'm here with my father, the star preacher, but I want to go out on my own and be a star.
Right. And so the other thing is you might see this in other kinds of genres as well, where someone might go from classical music and cross over to do something totally different because they think, well, popular music will make me more money. I'll get more listeners. I can be more successful, more famous. So it sounds like Aretha was doing something kind of, I don't know, questionable.
Rebellious. Yeah. Mm.
But we find out that actually her father encouraged her.
Yeah, her father approved of this changeover, this switch, and his voice carried immense weight because he had a lot of followers, numerous followers. So they heard him say, you know, this is okay for her to do, and so they believed him. Yeah.
If it carried immense weight, what do we mean there?
Well, it means he has a lot of influence.
Right.
Yeah. So I can imagine some of the people in the church are saying, hey, CEO, what's your daughter doing? I don't know. Not sure this is right.
Right.
And he says, it's cool by me.
Exactly. And she actually made a case for herself as well, didn't she?
Yes, a persuasive case in 1961. There she framed her transition in the context of the emerging civil rights movement. And we do think of the 60s for the civil rights movement when African Americans were really fighting for their freedoms in the United States of America.
Right, although most of them were in a fairly, I guess, free situation, they weren't allowed the same rights as white people were in many cases. And so there was a definite issue here. And we think of some of the leaders of this movement, like Martin Luther King Jr., as being very just exciting and important voices in this movement. And so Aretha was kind of putting herself into that category.
Yeah, she was, you know, joining this. There were people who were involved in active groups and organizations, many entertainers, and Aretha Franklin was one of them because while the laws had been changed to give African Americans equal rights, there still was tremendous discrimination.
Right.
They wouldn't get good jobs. They weren't allowed to rent apartments in certain places, all sorts of stuff.
Yes, exactly. So it was still a terrible, terrible situation. And they made, of course, a huge difference and they took great strides forward. And so for her to align herself to kind of become a part of this movement, everyone could agree that that was an excellent move with very good intentions of just doing the right thing.
Right. We would say maybe a viable means of expression that didn't repudiate her gospel roots so much as expand them. Now, this is a loaded second half of this sentence.
Yes.
So a viable means would mean just a legitimate or intended method, viable means.
Right. It works.
Of expressing it, right.
A way that works.
Mm-hmm.
And so she could express herself but not repudiate her roots.
Yeah. She's not throwing away where she came from. She's not throwing away her gospel roots, but she's really expanding out of them because she's not really changing her style so much as maybe broadening out about what she's going to sing about.
Right, exactly. So she's taking steps that are just bigger than her background, but going in the same direction, you could argue. So I think that's a great way to look at it. And but the author of this book goes a step further.
All right, yes, we hear once again from Anthony Helbert. He goes a step further and suggests that Franklin didn't bend to pop so much as bend pop toward her.
Okay, very interesting. Again, when I think of somebody like, you know, Katy Perry, if you compare some of her early music, or her very early music, to the kind of things she's producing now, you think, wow, she's really changed. She has changed herself to become more popular and to fit the mold of what people want to buy and so on. He's arguing Aretha really didn't do that at all.
No, she did not change for a different kind of music, but she really changed the music to fit her in a way. She didn't bend to pop so much as pop bent to her, to put it a little bit differently than the article does.
Right. So she really was the first gospel star to switch fields or genres without really switching styles. And you can hear for yourself what you think. This is a recording of an old hymn that she produced after her big crossover. Oh, I love it. What a great piece.
Yeah, you know, her singing and the gospel singing and thinking about this civil rights movement, it does fit right in because of her background. And many of the leaders in the civil rights movement were religious leaders, reverends and pastors, Reverend Martin Luther King, and many of the people in that movement. So it just is a perfect fit.
And I think just the fact that she did such good music and was so successful and had such popularity across all ethnicities, you know, it says a lot, too, for just helping people to be more open to the idea of civil rights when maybe they had been quite close-minded before.
Right. And I think it also helps that she really also crosses borders of race. I mean, there's all kinds of people that are big fans of her music, not just African-Americans, but, you know, all kinds of people.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, everyone, for Musical Legends Get Better With Time. We'd love to hear which of these 3 days was your favorite, so make sure you check out our Facebook page and studioclassroom.com. We'll see you again soon for another article from Advanced. Until then, this is Naomi.
Bill.
And this is Nathaniel.
Saying goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.